work with email and electronic issues. So please accept our EQSL as verification to your email. Anyway, we wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Manfred Monkey from Germany, one of our regular listeners and old listeners, has sent us an email. Manfred says, "Dear sirs, I had a great pleasure of receiving your radio here in Germany. I have sent my reception information about my listening to your station, and I hope that this report would be helpful for you. To make sure that I have been listening to your station, I'm enclosing an MP3 recording of my reception. I would be very happy if you could confirm that it really was your radio I was listening to. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We're so grateful for this email, Manfred Monkey from Germany, one of our old and regular listeners. We are so happy to receive this email from you. Of course, your email is very helpful to us because by your emails and your views, we can promote the quality of our programs. Manfred Monkey from Germany, thank you for everything. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as verification to your email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you." So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. Rob says, "To the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting English service, it's my pleasure to confirm your broadcast and I hope my report is correct. My name is Rob Den Boer and I live in the Netherlands waiting for a reply from your side. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's a pleasure to receive this email and we're so glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in your region, in your country, the Netherlands, and of course in your region. I don't know where city or town you live in, but you can tell us in your upcoming emails. Anyway, we are so happy to have received this email from you and it's a pleasure to have you with us as a listener in your upcoming emails. Rob Den Boer, please tell us your views about the programs you had and the quality of the programs. It's great. And please accept our EQSL or electronic QSL as verification to this email. Thank you. We wish you all the best. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. As I always say, art is long, but life is short, and we have to say goodbye to you. But before that, I do send my warm greetings and appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Aaron Teo from the Philippines, Avinash Chikat from India, Akiyoshi Taraoka from Japan, of course, Jawahar Almeida from India, and Manfred Monkey from Germany, and Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. We had a great time being together. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. In this program, we try to answer your questions and queries you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi, who is an Islamic scholar and a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, Qom, Iran. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Professor, as we have been discussing a lot about teenage issues in the previous episode, we talked about mental health issues, and towards the end of our episode, we said we can actually engage our teenagers into physical activities which can actually help them to cope up with their mental stress, mental issues they're dealing with. Now, how important is to encourage healthy hobbies and interests for teenagers?
It's very important that, as we said previously also, all of these activities which we carry out in our daily lives, they should be all learning activities. As it is mentioned, this hadith of the Holy Prophet of Islam, that he says that أطلب العلم من المهد إلى اللحد. One should continue to learn from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah.
So that has to happen. As we have also said, that does not mean that you need to go to school all the time.
Yeah.
Many things we are learning outside school in an informal way.
Yeah.
So that learning is there all the time. So if we are engaged in activities which is going to teach us, make us learn, make us develop ourselves, the more we learn, the more we can be successful.
Right.
I mean, there are so many things Allah Almighty has created in nature, in the universe. We need to study them. So there are different hobbies through
right.
which we can learn about them. For example, our children are interested by nature, they're interested by scientific discovery, we need to support them, we need to help them to find suitable activities
right.
which are going to take them into nature for maybe hiking on the mountains or trekking or whatever, so activities concerned with nature.
Right.
We make them an activist. We guide them to becoming an activist who is working for the protection of nature.
Right.
For protection of the wildlife, for the protection
right.
of natural resources. I mean, so many things can be done by children can do a lot of things, and they need to be, They need to be motivated to do those things and carry out those things which are important. For example, you can make your children make an album of flowers, maybe collect flowers and dry them up, and you know, the children used
make
to do that.
Make an album.
Album of maybe coins album. You need to collect coins of the world.
Wow.
We used to do that when we were young. I still have a collection of coins from different countries.
Wow.
So that was a hobby, or stamp collection, for example. Now, I mean, nowadays, nothing of this sort is being done by our children.
Yeah.
There was stamp collection. Even postcards were being sent, as we say, in the previous times. People would send, would go for an outing to a picnic or some other part of the world. They would send a postcard for their family members. Look, I've been to this place, and this is the postcard.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, you're doing it on Facebook, maybe.
Okay.
But people would collect those postcards as memories of the past.
Okay.
So, I mean, so many things can be done as hobbies, as pastimes, which can have an emotional and mental, you know, effect on the well-being of a human being.
Right.
Being able to relate to nature, being able to relate to human beings, being able to relate with the family members in activities. For example, we sit together, play a game of, for example, Scrabble, or play a game of Monopoly or whatever. I mean, we're engaging in Ludo or maybe carom board, as we have in many countries in the subcontinent. We have this carom board which we sit together about. So all these are activities are for our leisure times, for our, you know, free times. And this is very important.
Wherein we can engage our teenagers. Well, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Nakavi, and we're discussing about teenage issues, especially the hobbies and pastime activities that we can encourage our teenagers to be doing. Yes, Professor.
So we can, you know, make them go for sports activities, for swimming, for gymnastics, or any sort of games which we can, you know, develop their
badminton,
different sports are there. Even some martial arts are there. Other, I mean, so many activities can be done. Unfortunately, the problem is some of our children are very good at them, and they're not very good at academics. Sometimes there are people outside who do well in academics, but they're not there out in the society. So both have to be, as we mentioned before,
balanced.
So there are many pastimes, there are many hobbies. For example, you need to, as I said before, going into the nature, going into the woods, into the jungles, into visiting areas alongside the sea, the ocean, rivers. So this gives us the sense of belonging to nature and going back to nature and protecting nature and taking care of it. And for example, when we go out for a picnic, we sit together in a garden. And then we teach our children, oh, we're not supposed to litter the place. We need to, when we stand, go up and go away, before going away, we need to, you know, pack our things properly. Any litter which is there, we should put it in the litter box.
Right.
And we teach our children to take care of those places. And for example,
And accordingly, we can actually take them back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Look at the creation,
exactly.
The art.
One of the most important, beautiful ways of taking children to that natural fitra of the human beings, that they we take them to nature and to talk about the signs of Allah Almighty, talk to them about the,
right.
the things in the skies, in the heavens, the stargazing, star looking, looking in the sky, finding the stars, finding the various zodiacs which are there. It's very interesting, and children sometimes love it. Or, for example, that's interacting with our elderly people, taking care of elderly people,
right.
visiting their homes and helping them out.
Right.
Or poor people, finding people who are in need, people who are require. Nowadays, alhamdulillah, we find these social movements in the society which go out themselves and find people who are poor, then they collect funds and they make
help.
Help them out. So this is a very important thing. I mean, so whether it's...
And teens, you're saying that teens got to be involved in
these
activities.
They need to be. They need to learn how to take care of the people who are...
living under the line.
Less fortunate people of our society.
Right.
Or the elderly people. There are so many elderly people whose children, whose offspring don't take care of them. And unfortunately, that's a part of the mechanical world that is getting up, which is being set up today. In the past, we had joint family systems, and even in many countries of the Indo-Pak subcontinent, we have joint families.
Right.
People don't throw out their grandparents.
Right.
They live with them. But unfortunately, in the westernized societies,
we
have old people's homes.
Right.
So these are problems.
We'll discuss more on that, Professor, with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Teach your children swimming and archery."
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Akavi, and we are discussing a very important topic, how to encourage your teenagers into good hobbies and pastimes, and some of the very, very interesting and very rare kind of pastimes and hobbies have been discussed by Professor Salman Nagavi so far. Yes, Professor.
And we need to, as I said, take them towards things which we can help people. Or even, for example, that we live in a society where the government is not taking care of the hygiene.
Soundings.
So you need to set up a volunteer force to clean up your neighborhood, for example. Or there are people who have problems at home. They need getting repairs done are so expensive. You can go and help them and make repairs to their homes. There's a door broken. There's a lock broken. You need to help them, assist them into, you know, repairing that. They have a pump, water pump, something. You can repair that. So we need our children to learn skills and techniques to take care of repairs at home. For example, they learn how to manage electrical appliances. They need they learn how to, you know, do the electrical wiring, do the plumbing.
Right.
So many things can be taught to our children as technical issues, as vocations, which they can, you know, benefit from themselves. They always don't need to call a plumber. They don't need to call, for example, an electrician.
Right.
They can do it on their own.
On their own.
So they can go out and help others. And if this is done in Islamic societies, especially in Islamic societies around the mosque, around the masjid should become, the mosque should become the center of these activities.
Exactly.
So this is what Islam wants, that the center...
Which used to be there in the time
Which used to
of...
be there, exactly. So even the wall call was given from the masjid, because when we say mihrab,
right.
The mihrab is where the imam stands and leads the prayers or delivers the sermon.
Sermons.
That is the mihrab, and that is from harb. Harb is a place from where the call for war was given. So the mosque occupied the central place in Islamic society, in the Islamic neighborhood. And all these activities, if they are carried out by the teens around this, then their connection with Allah Almighty and the duty towards mankind will, you know, come in
get
together.
Get even stronger.
Yes.
Yeah. And our youth can actually get engaged into much better activities.
Exactly. So they can interconnect these activities with their responsibility towards Allah Almighty. Allah Almighty says that He wants people to work for people. He doesn't require our services. Our praying, offering prayers is not for Him. Is there for us? There for our benefit.
Right.
And He wants us to. When He calls us to the mosque, He wants society to interact with each other.
Exactly.
The congregational prayers is just an excuse to get people together.
Right.
To work together, to live together.
To know each other.
To solve each other's problems.
Problems.
So the society in an Islamic state, in an Islamic community, is based around Allah's connection.
Right.
That is the mosque.
So
that is very important, that our pastimes and hobbies, our children, should be brought to the mosques and carried out from there.
Right. Hobbies are actually great distractions from the worries and troubles that plague our daily living. And we should be encouraging our children to be having very interesting hobbies and pastimes, as Professor Salman Akavi already suggested. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us and suggesting so beautiful hobbies. And thank you so much to our listeners who were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 19th and 20th verses of this chapter.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن الذين يحبون أن تشيع الفاحشة في الذين آمنوا لهم عذاب أليم في الدنيا والآخرة والله يعلم وأنتم لا تعلمون.
Indeed, those who like that immorality should be spread among those who have believed will have a painful punishment in this world and the hereafter. And Allah knows, and you do not know.
ولولا فضل الله عليكم ورحمته وأن الله رؤوف رحيم.
And if it had not been for the favor of Allah upon you and His mercy, and because Allah is kind and merciful.
Dear listeners, the point that we can say is that in this verse, for leaving no doubt, the words are changed from expressing a private phenomenon into statement of a general and comprehensive rule. I mean, it should be known that interest in spreading indecency is sometimes materialized by tongue and pen, and sometimes by setting up some centers of abomination and wickedness, encouraging others to commit sin, providing others with facilities for doing wrong actions and committing sin. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "One who hears or sees something about a believer and retells it for others is among the examples of this verse." إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُحِبُّونَ أَن تَشِيعَ الْفَاحِشَةُ فِي الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. He is from among those who love that indecency is spread concerning those who believe. So, this verse, as a general and comprehensive rule, states, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُحِبُّونَ أَن تَشِيعَ الْفَاحِشَةُ فِي الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. Verily, those who love that indecency is spread concerning the life of those who believe. لَهُمْ عَذَابٌ أَلِيمٌ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. For those will be a painful punishment in the world and hereafter. It is worth studying, worth noting, that the verse does not say those who spread indecency, but it says الَّذِينَ يُحِبُّونَ أَن تَشِيعَ الْفَاحِشَةِ. Those who love that indecency should be spread. And this is the ultimate emphasis on this field. In other words, it says it must not be thought that such insistence and emphasis is just for the sake that the wife of the Prophet ﷺ or someone as important as her is accused. But if such a thing happens to anyone and to every faithful person, this emphasis, this insistence will be applied to that person because other aspects will be added to it. And we must pay careful attention to the fact that spreading indecency is not allocated to only spreading false, baseless accusations of a faithful man and woman and to accuse them of an unchaste action. This is only one example. And this verse, of course it is general, is not limited to it. This phrase has got a very wide concept. This verse involves every kind of corruption, every kind of spreading indecency and giving help to its development. Of course, in the Holy Quran, the Arabic word fahisha or fahsha is mostly applied to sexual deviations, but philologically speaking, as Raghib says in the book of Mufradat, fuhsh and fahsha refer to any kind of behavior and speech that the obscenity of it is very bad and great.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, as it is said in the Holy Quran, it is sometimes used in the vast meaning. I mean, the word fahisha and fahsha is used as a general term, although it is mostly used and applied to sexual deviations and obscenity in honor, but it has a general meaning. And those who shun the great sins and indecencies, this is what the Holy Quran says. So the extent of the concept of a verse gets completely clear. It is so general. But the sentence, "theirs will be a painful punishment in the world and hereafter," may refer to religiously prescribed punishments, those social reactions and individual gloomy consequences that in this very world will catch those who commit these actions. Moreover, their deprivation from the right of testimony and their condemnation to disgrace and iniquity are also its other worldly signs. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. In today's program, we'll be discussing the recent IMF bailout package secured by Pakistan and Iran-Saudi relations, which can positively impact Pakistan. So stay tuned.
In this special episode of the subcontinent, we will discuss Pakistan's vicious IMF cycle, and we shall also take a look at Pakistan's growth in the backdrop of Iran-Saudi relations.
Pakistan went to the IMF in 1958, just 11 years after its creation. Now more than 60 years, the current $3 billion deal is the country's 23rd IMF package. This dependence on foreign loans and aids have entangled the country in a never-ending economic crisis. Financial experts believe that the country will again be in need of another bailout package in the immediate future, thus limiting Pakistan's chances of coming out of the debt cycle.
A never-ending trade deficit, heavy borrowing to finance its spending, and poor debt management. Pakistan has been reduced to an economy that consumes more than it produces, relying on debt both from foreign and national sources. After the IMF deal, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are also expected to provide combined $3 billion in financing to Islamabad. Saudi Arabia has made its aid conditional to Pakistan's revamping of economic policies similar to the IMF rules. According to economic analysts, the manipulative external financial help reduces entrepreneurship opportunities, makes the country dependent on imports, discouraging the economic growth, thus preventing Pakistan to become self-reliant. Dealing with grueling repayments of its foreign debts, with record high inflation, the country is going to elections later this year. Some political commentators believe that procurement of the IMF financial package will be used by some political parties to secure their position in the upcoming election.
The initial draft of the 2023-24 budget failed to meet the IMF expectations. It was revised hurriedly to introduce new taxes and expenditure cuts to fulfill the conditions put forward by the global lender for loan bailouts. Economic analysts say the neoliberal policies that Islamabad has been trying to follow over the years to be granted loans by the IMF have not helped improve the lives of people, but instead have been fulfilling the interests of a section of elites.
The Central Bank of Pakistan has been asked by the World Monetary Body to remain proactive to control inflation. On the demand of IMF, the bank had to hike the key rate by 100 basis points after the financial organization objected to its unchanged rate. The power sector of Pakistan, which has been specifically mentioned by the IMF to rebase the tariffs timely, has raised prices for the consumers despite record high inflation in the present year. The IMF has also asked the country to withdraw import restrictions put in place for controlling external payments, as the cash-stripped country's reserves stand at $3.5 billion, barely enough to cover a month's imports. The other condition that the world lender has put forward is full commitment to a market-determined exchange rate without taking into consideration the fall of rupee to record lows in the recent weeks. Foreign affairs analysts have said the loan that IMF gives to countries like Pakistan is designed to trap a country in endless debt at the behest of the United States.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by economic analyst Mr. Javed Hassan from Islamabad. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Hassan.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're more than welcome. Now, Mr. Hassan, Pakistan has recently secured a $3 billion financial package from the IMF. Will it really offer relief to Pakistan's economic crisis, keeping in view the neoliberal economic policies Islamabad will have to adopt?
It will offer relief in the sense that Pakistan will avert default in the short run, given that if we hadn't received this $3 billion bailout, Pakistan would have imminently faced potential default, which would have had severe impact on the populace as a whole. So in that, it has provided some relief to the people. Yes, I think so. But in that, it will improve the lifestyle and general welfare of the people. I don't think so. There's still a lot that has to be done. The economy still is in a very dire situation. There is still high inflation, near 30% inflation. there's still scarcity of essential goods. So I don't think it provides a lot of relief, but it does provide for things not getting worse.
Now, Mr. Hassan, financial experts have warned that the country will need another bailout package immediately. Now, you've hinted this before, but I want you to explain a bit more in detail. How is this dependence on loans and packages destroying Pakistan's economy?
The thing is that Pakistan has to, over the next 3 years, repay loans, principal repayments plus interest in the tune of something like $75 billion. If you include current account deficits of about 6 to 7 billion every year, then you're looking at external outflow of something like $91 billion. So this makes Pakistan highly dependent on external borrowing. This is not something which has happened just in the last few years. It has been a culmination of over 30 years or 35 years of bad policies. Pakistan does not export enough. Pakistan does not produce enough to cover its own requirements. So it has to import much more than it can export. As a result, it is highly dependent on foreign inflows. It gets some inflows through remittances and also some from exports, but that is not sufficient to cover the imports that it has. As a result, it has continuously borrowed. And the borrowing is now having to be repaid. So there is no avoidance of this. At some point, I think Pakistan will need to restructure its debt and such that it gets some fiscal space to spend on its people and grow. Right now, there is no such space.
Like you mentioned, sir, this, it's been happening for decades now. So the current IMF deal in Pakistan is Pakistan's 24th package since the formation in 1947. So do you see Islamabad coming out of this debt cycle?
Not in the near term, no. Unfortunately not. If anything, the debt cycle is getting worse. The government borrowing is even higher than it has been in the past. The speed at which government borrowing and government debt is increasing is accelerating rather than decelerating. There is nothing to suggest that Pakistan is getting out of its difficulties. What we have from the IMF loan is a short-term reprieve. It is not a cancellation of the debt sentence. So we are just basically postponing difficulties that are going to come in not too distant future.
That's right, sir. You've mentioned bad policies in your second question. Now, the long political turmoil in the country is regarded as an important reason for the failing economy. In what way are the opportunistic political policies contributing to the deepening financial crisis?
Well, the lack of comprehensive mandate or the ability of the political forces to do what is necessary in the economy, it really compounds the difficulties. To start with, Pakistan has a very low tax to GDP ratio. It's below 10% and continues to remain below 10%. Numerous think tanks, including IMF, have repeatedly suggested that Pakistan needs to broaden its tax base so that if it borrows its tax base, it can generate more revenues. Once it does that, it probably needs to borrow less. But given the political expedience that politicians have, they don't want to tax the retail sector, they don't want to tax the agricultural sector, they don't want to tax the property sector. Given all this, a large share of the economy is not taxed, and because the same people are taxed more and more, given that they are taxed more and more, they become more inefficient, and the other sectors continue to grow. So effectively, what we have is insufficient tax base, more and more borrowing from both domestic and external sources. So we are actually increasing the difficulties rather than reducing it. And there is no sign of a major change in policy direction as of now.
Thank you, sir. There you have it, Mr. Javed Hassan from Islamabad. He's an economic analyst. Thank you for being on the program, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
More than welcome. And now let's see how people have reacted to the recent IMF bailout package secured by Pakistan.
Euphoric, a technology learner interested in music, photography, and spirituality, tweeted, "Nothing new for Pakistan. It is like having a credit card from Chinese, Saudi, Turkey, UAE, World Bank, IMF, and using the money to pay here and there and put a bandage on an incurable disease." Erica Brown, a China observer and UN consultant from the US, tweeted, "Why will Pakistan remain a slave country forever? Because autonomous nations do not rely on loans, aid, and remittances from other countries. Pakistan exists because since independence, it is living on foreign aid." Steve Hank, professor of applied economics at Johns Hopkins University, tweeted, "Debt-ridden countries like Pakistan are kidding themselves if they think passing the begging bowl to the IMF and taking on more IMF debt will solve their problems." Zaid Ahmed, a netizen from Pakistan, tweeted, "It's indeed temporary positive development for Pakistan. But again, after some time, we will again run to IMF and make life of people harsher and harsher."
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent here on IRIB English Radio.
The recent reconciliation between Iran and Saudi Arabia, brokered by China, has opened up a new chapter of possibilities, presenting both economic opportunities and strategic benefits for Pakistan. Strategic affairs experts believe that the restoration of diplomatic ties and the resumption of bilateral cooperation between these two significant players in the Middle East can pave the way for enhanced trade, energy connections, and stability in the region. With Pakistan's geographic proximity to both Iran and Saudi Arabia, this reconciliation presents significant opportunities for the South Asian countries' economic and regional influence.
Iran has long been an important trading partner for Pakistan, while Saudi Arabia remains a major economic ally, with a large Pakistani diaspora contributing to its workforce and remittance inflows. Analysts say that the restoration of diplomatic ties will foster a conducive environment for trade and investment, benefiting Pakistan's economy and providing a much-needed boost to the South Asian Muslim country. Pakistan's close ties with China in the context of China's Belt and Road Initiative, coupled with the restoration of relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, presents a unique opportunity to align the interests of all parties involved. This alignment, according to financial experts, is believed to contribute to the success of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor and the broader BRI, fostering economic growth and regional integration. Furthermore, recent steps taken by Pakistan and Iran to open up the trade market at the common border have paved the way for discussions on currency swap agreement and transit mechanisms between Tehran and Islamabad.
Tensions in the Middle East have long been a cause of concern, but the Iran-Saudi détente marks a turning point in the complex geopolitics of the Middle East. Regional experts maintain that Pakistan, with its balanced approach and historical efforts to mediate between Iran and Saudi Arabia, stands poised to capitalize on the positive momentum. By maintaining diplomatic ties with both the nations, Pakistan can act as a bridge, fostering dialogue and cooperation, ultimately contributing to a more stable and prosperous region.
Proximity between Tehran and Riyadh has a significant impact on Pakistan's internal security and political stability. Historically, Saudi Arabia has closely monitored Pakistan's relations with Iran, exerting pressure on Islamabad to toe its line. However, this recent agreement eliminates a significant obstacle, allowing Pakistan to expand trade and strategic cooperation with both Iran and Saudi Arabia. The Iran-Saudi Reconciliation Agreement, despite having economic benefits, serves as an opportunity for Pakistan to address sectarian tensions within its borders. Foreign affairs analysts believe By reducing tensions and promoting religious tolerance, this reconciliation can help alleviate the sufferings of Pakistan's significant Shia population, helping to create an atmosphere of harmony and coexistence.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by political analyst and author Mr. Mir Muhammad Ali Khan from Islamabad. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Ali Khan.
Thank you so much, brother.
You're welcome, sir. Now, let's begin with the questions. The normalization of ties between Iran and Saudi Arabia opens up new opportunities for trade and economic cooperation. So my question is, how can Pakistan use this development to maximize its economic potential?
First of all, my congratulations as a Pakistani that relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia have normalized. I love this. Until Pakistan comes out of the American bloc, I don't think we can benefit anything from this. I want Pakistan to benefit from this, and there's so much Pakistan can gain, but Pakistan politicians are absolutely influenced by America. If Iran and Saudi Arabia can have normalization of ties, then Pakistan can stand up for its own rights, and Iran being our neighbor, Saudi Arabia being a country which Pakistan has long-standing brotherly relationship with, it is a wonderful omen for Pakistan if it comes out of the American bloc. Until then, I don't think much can be done.
Now, sir, away from the economic aspect of it, improved relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia have the potential to reduce sectarian tensions in Pakistan. How can Islamabad leverage this opportunity to promote religious tolerance and coexistence within its borders?
If Pakistan does not control its internal bigotry of organizations, now it is the perfect time to say that none of the countries are supporting, neither of the countries are supporting anything here. Pakistan needs to crack down. We have seen tens of thousands of sectarian killings in Pakistan from both sides. This is the best opportunity to close down those outfits that spread sectarian violence, sectarian bigotry. Those must need to be closed down. And those other countries that always demand from Pakistan that sectarian violence be finished, I think they do have a logical demand from Pakistan. And this is the best opportunity for Pakistan, because now we cannot have any excuse that Iran is supporting anything or Saudi is supporting anything. This excuse has worked some logically and some illogically, but now there is no excuse left.
That's right, Mr. Ali Khan. Now, we know that the renewal of Iran-Saudi relations could also help diffuse regional rivalries. How can Pakistan seize this opportunity to reduce the influence of extremist groups and enhance the security and also stability?
Economic betterment is absolutely related to security of any country. When we control this extremism within our own country, we can, along with Iran, we can become a regional group of countries more powerful than anything which has been witnessed in the past 25, 30, 40, 50 years. Iran is our neighbor. Iran is one of the largest oil producers, gas producers. Why are we shying away from having a economic tie with Iran? With collaboration of Iran, we can get cheaper oil. And transfer of technology, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Pakistan, Turkey, Malaysia, there's so many countries that can have a block, an economic block. Why can't we have an economic block that benefits Pakistan and the region? Afghanistan has opened up. Iran is working with Afghanistan. Saudi Arabia is working with Afghanistan. Why can't we put up an economic block for this region that benefits everything and have cordial relationships with America? Let not America dictate to us what Pakistan should do and Pakistan should not do. The biggest problem is that we have lost out on economic betterment with Iran when it comes to vis-a-vis Pakistan and Iran, because of the fact that we're always being dictated by America.
So say one of the reasons could be the sanctions. So what could these two countries do?
You see, the sanction is a sword that America hangs on every country. Iran has had sanctions. Isn't Iran growing? I've been to Iran so many times. I see that country growing. Why didn't America, if Saudi Arabia and Pakistan can have great ties, Iran and Saudi Arabia can have great ties, we can have great ties with both the countries without having any sanctions. Why should? Sanctions are not that easy to put. Those days are gone. This globalized world, we can't have sanctions put on us like that without any reason. Doing business with Iran, so the whole world is doing business with Iran. Why can't Pakistan do business with Iran?
That's right, sir. Before we let you go, sir, let's talk about CPEC as well, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. It's an integral part of the larger Belt and Road Initiative. So how can improved relations between Iran, Saudi Arabia and China further enhance the prospects of CPEC and also promote regional economic integration?
CPEC, one of the biggest investments of CPEC has been in Pakistan, of the biggest investments of BRI, Belt and Road Initiative, part, which is the parent project of China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. Having Iran and Saudi Arabia both join CPEC along with Afghanistan, the route, the land route alone can go all the way to Europe. Pakistan can benefit so much by having Iran into CPEC. Saudi Arabia has already shown its interest to develop a $20 billion refinery city in Gwadar. Iran can do the same for Pakistan, and we can together rise. We need economic betterment. No betterment can come without economic betterment, and no economic betterment can come without holding hands with your neighbors. We can't be not doing business with our neighbor because somebody 8,000 miles away in America says that we can't. Those days are gone. This is not 1970s and 80s where there is a Soviet bloc and there is an American bloc. Now this is a globalized world. And in this globalized world, we need to hold hands. And we need, as a Pakistani, I'm saying this, we need to think about Pakistan and Pakistani people rather than them being scared of the Western world.
There you have it, political analyst and author, Mr. Mir Muhammad Ali Khan from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, sir.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, sir. And now let's take a look at how the global media has covered the Iran-Saudi relations and its impact on Pakistan.
Michael Kugelman, director of the South Asia Institute at the Wilson Center, tweeted, "The China-mediated Iran-Saudi Arabia reconciliation is a black swan event, a surprise, rare watershed moment for international relations that will have major ripple effects across the globe, including South Asia, especially Pakistan, where Iran-KSA rivalry has played out heavily." Isa Ali, a researcher, wrote, "Reconciliation between Saudi and Iran benefits Pakistan. It will help Pakistan maintain a more balanced relationship between the two nations. As things stand, Saudi Arabia has financially been very helpful to Pakistan, whereas Iran is a regional trading partner." Naveed Aman Khan, an editor, political analyst and columnist, wrote, "Reconciliation between Saudi Arabia and Iran would be of great relief for Muslims across the world, especially Pakistan. Pakistan needs to have strong, balanced ties with the two countries. On the other hand, Chinese diplomacy is winning well-deserved appreciation." Waqas Aslam Rana, a political commentator, tweeted, "China's foray into Middle East and South Asia, plus Saudi-Iranian detente, is opening up new opportunities for Pakistan. In particular, the Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline, vital for our energy security, but for long blocked by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, may now have a chance."
And that was our episode on IMF damaging the economic basis of Pakistan and the friendly relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia set to benefit the South Asian Muslim country. We'll meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not. ربنا يا ربنا يا ربنا يا حي ويا قيوم نور قلبنا.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very important and significant question, and that question is about what are the characteristics of the humble people? You know, humility is one of the very central and important virtues within Islam, as you know. The characteristic of humility has been referenced in the Holy Quran and the Hadith in many places. And, for example, in one place in the Holy Quran, we read the following. God says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim,